Welcome, and thank you for listening to this recording, part of the Comprehensive Opioid Stimulant and Substance Abuse Program, or COSAP, podcast series. COSAP provides financial and technical assistance to states and units of local and Indian tribal governments to plan, develop, and implement comprehensive efforts to identify, respond to, treat, and support those impacted by the opioid epidemic. Since 2017, BJA has supported innovative work on these COSAP sites across the nation. Funding and programmatic support for COSAP is provided by the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, or BJA. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those of the U.S. Department of Justice.
Thank you again for joining us for Episode 4. Sadie, Rich, and I will conclude our discussion on the intersection of PRSS services by focusing on sustainability. You will notice a concluding episode, and we encourage you to listen for further information as well as contact information on our guest speakers, the Bureau of Justice Assistance Comprehensive Opioid Stimulant and Substance Abuse Program, and access to training and technical assistance opportunities offered by Altara. Thank you again for listening.
When we talk about sustainability, after we've collected the data and we're looking to sustain our programs, how have you been able to do that fiscally and programmatically? I think we've kind of touched on it a tad, but I would like to ask it directly to see if there's maybe a different response that either of you would have. Rich, if you'd like to speak to that.
Sure, I'd be glad to. It's amazing, you know, as I mentioned, like being like a fledgling program with grant money, we literally started with $36,000 when we were doing a proof of concept. That's not a lot of money to really have an impact. So we really focused on the things that would work and to show that we deserve more money. So we built slow from what the money we had. And then when more funds were offered, we just kept expanding. But we built slowly again, you know, to grow the program. And you know, we use a model that uses coaches on call, you know, so there's really no full-time staff. The funds we receive are stretched thin to achieve the goals. So programmatically, we continue to work with those who support us and then expand to other departments. So I think that programmatically, as we went along, we got a lot of feedback of what would work. And it wasn't our voice, it was the voice of the community or the voice of law enforcement saying, we would like to have someone in our department too, one day a week or 2 days a week. So if someone comes in, that we can help them. So the programs can grow, you know, as the success is seen, then people start asking for more. And of course, we want to provide more, but it seems that they have a bigger impact than we do ourselves, and even more than the data. When you have departments asking for more support and to have peers at their department, a lot of times money that didn't seem to be there can show up.
So it seems like the rapport yields more organic growth.
Exactly. So and now that we have the COSAP funding, those ideas that we wanted to use, we had used money, I think, and the second time we received a grant, we had used funding to put an officer on call specifically. So we used money for overtime for officers, because what we found is that one of the reasons officers weren't calling us is they literally don't have the time to call us and wait for us. So when we put on an officer on call, what would happen is that the officer would call from whichever municipality, the officer on call would get the call also. And then they would dispatch to the scene. And so officers who were our supporters would be glad to wait an extra 10 minutes for someone to show up to hold the scene so they could leave and go do their other role. And, you know, to go do their, you know, take on their other responsibilities. I was with officers at a scene and as they put three calls on hold. So this is something that's not great for the community. So having an officer on call to come hold the scene till we get there and to make sure we're safe became something that showed our success. Now, we didn't have the funding to continue that, but now with COSAP, we're doing that with three departments to have officers that can be on call to hold the scene. So an officer is more apt to call us knowing that they won't have to stay there for an hour and they could go home or go do the work that's needed to be done.
That's very innovative and a wonderful way of utilizing resources and being adaptable at the same time.
Yes, yeah, so when you get that feedback, it's real important to listen to what the people that you're working with, what they're saying they want. You may not be able to solve the issue immediately, but we were always talking to it over the last couple of years. And then when funding becomes available, we know what we want to do that'll support our partners.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Rich. That's very helpful.
You're welcome.
Sadie, would you also speak to that on how you all have been able to sustain your peer programming, both fiscally and programmatically?
Sure. So actually, our organization was about a $90,000 a year organization in 2020, January 2020. We have been lucky enough to grow over $1.3 million a year, which is a huge growth in a couple of years. Also, you know, growth comes with its own challenges. So we have always prioritized making sure we have put resources towards grant applications and making sure that we are fulfilling all of the requirements of grants so that we can be re-awarded when possible. So that so far has been fruitful for us. We also make sure that we're partnering with plenty of other community stakeholders that may have funds, like Rich was talking about, that may not have been there, and then suddenly they're there because there's a benefit to these services. So actually creating partnership funding opportunities with individual county jails and even county jails that are hoping to work together. So super rural county jails may not have the need for a full-time peer support specialist, but they may partner with a couple other county jails that would love to have a full-time across three or four of them. And so there's that. I also think it's really cool that you have the perspective of a peer-run organization. And, you know, what Rich's organization or program does, because they're so different. And we try to employ people full-time as much as possible. We want them to have access to benefits. We offer, you know, flex scheduling and all of that so that we are decreasing the possibility of burnout. I love the idea of the on-call contractor too, because then someone's not just sitting around being clocked on for no reason. In our organization, we allow people to flex. They can go to church with someone on a Sunday and leave early on a Friday, or go to a recovery meeting at 8 o'clock at night on a weekday and then come in at 11 the next day, or whatever that might look like for them. So there's a couple different layers of sustainability. We need to be able to sustain our workforce. And as far as behavioral health agencies go, we're doing pretty well. We haven't lost anyone, knock on wood, but behavioral health agencies in Nebraska are really struggling to maintain employees, and burnout is a huge, huge thing. So we want to make sure that our staff are fully supported so that we're not losing people due to burnout. So that's another piece of sustainability. It's been primarily myself and Danielle Smith, my partner, have been focusing on sustainability, but having someone always looking and working towards sustainability is really, really important. Even if we get a 3 or 4 year grant, we don't pause looking for sustainability. We continue to look for ways that we could support that program without the grant, even if we know we probably will get it again in 3 years, because we don't ever want our programs to just disappear because a grant did.
Right, always looking ahead.
Very much so.
And so I think you've touched on this, but I want to ask you specifically, because you talked about burnout within other organizations in Nebraska, but you all have had great success in retaining your employees and your peers. And so aside from the flexibility, is there something that you feel like has made your organization successful in retaining your peer specialists?
Well, I think there's several things. So several of us here also have special interests in organizational culture. And so I think that that contributes to us always looking at, you know, are we taking care of ourselves? As leadership, we try to demonstrate good self-care practices. We also have kind of a flat circular management structure. So everyone's voice matters and very much in alignment with the principles of peer support. Anyone can come to the table and bring their thoughts and ideas. And Danielle and I will listen and try to adjust things accordingly. And that's hard to do, especially as we grow. But I think that it's really, really important. And we try to make sure that our pay is actually a livable wage so that people aren't experiencing burnout from lack of resources in their personal lives, and make sure that our physical health, vision, dental benefits are equitable with other organizations. And we're just very understanding and open. We really, really encourage authentic relationships being built within the organization so that people can come and say, you know, this is going on with me personally, and it's not held against them. Their work can actually be a place of support instead of an additional stressor to personal life challenges.
That sounds so incredible. And what a precedent, not only for a peer-led organization, but for organizations in general to have all those things in mind and to do all those things for your employees and make them feel supported in whatever they choose to do and provide resources for them. That's just amazing to hear and such a precedent for your community.
Thank you. Yeah, we're proud of the retention rate we have. So far, we're at 100%, which is really awesome. I do understand we will probably not be able to stay that forever, but right now it's really cool.
Yeah, congratulations. That is something to absolutely celebrate. Because it means you all are doing just whatever needs to be done, you're doing it right. Rich, I know that you all have a little bit of a different structure with Burlington County. So I'm interested to hear how that works, working with individuals who have lived experience and also individuals who don't have lived experience, and how that works with your organization in terms of roles and communication.
The small group of peers that we have working with us, they do have lived experience, and others are either friends and family members of those in recovery or suffering from addiction. So there is a lived experience in one way or another. And so people don't run into what they call compassion fatigue. They have that ability to stick with people where maybe if someone is not in recovery or doesn't understand addiction, they quickly lose interest in helping someone, where our peers can stay in there, where we understand they're not acting logically. That's logical to us. So we really look to have that group working as peers for us. And we have a clinical supervisor. So there's monthly group supervision with our peers, and they have individual sessions with our peers to really deal with that. And like Sadie was saying, to avoid any type of burnout, we really want to stay ahead of what people are dealing with. And we've been flexible too in situations where it's needed that we give people a day off or take some time off or do what you got to do. And then the other peers back them up, no problem. I think that clinical supervisor is so key to the peer role. And the assistant prosecutor I work with, Melissa O'Mara, and I, from the beginning, that was the first thing that we need to, even if we have very little money, a clinical supervisor will be taken out of the funds first to make sure that we're supporting those that we work with. And that's been very successful for us, and to make sure that we're taking care of the people who work for us. Our peers provide 6 weeks of coaching to our program participants, and it's loosely designed as like 3 times a week for 3 weeks, and then 2 times a week for the following 3 weeks. And then people can say, oh, I want more coaching, and then they're qualified to get coaching and they can have coaching for another 6 weeks. But what we found is for those that we work with that are really committed to getting on track, that after 6 weeks, we literally get them on track and they'll have a support, you know, network set up in whichever pathway of recovery they choose. So it's interesting where we get to the end and it may sound odd, but like there's not much more to say. They've gotten themselves on their feet and they're doing what they're doing. And I think what's also special about our peers in line with that compassion fatigue, or the opposite of compassion fatigue, like we really, when we run into somebody, we treat it like it's the first time we ever met them and there's no consequences for past behavior. So we've had an example of a person who, depending on the coach on call, like there was maybe 7+ calls for this one person over a few month period. And we would always go out there, try to get them the services they requested. And then if they at the last minute decided they don't want those services, the next time they call, we do the same thing. So it's great to have those people on our team that really have the true compassion for those we work with. And retaining the peers, we've been very successful too. We've had some come and go, but the way our system is designed is most of our peers have a full-time job and then they fit in time to work with us with their schedule. And what's great about what we do is we give them some extra finances that maybe their full-time role isn't giving them. And it also gives them that ability to, as I heard in the conference today, to put their passion into action. A lot of people that we work with, that's what they want to do. They want to be out there with peers and helping people because it was given to them. And so we've had 5 or 6 coaches covering a 24/7 operation year round, backing each other up with vacations, et cetera. And, you know, we've been very successful. And I think also with retaining peers, you know, as a person in recovery myself, there's a certain bond that we have. And I also run an organization years ago, my own business as an entrepreneur, and mainly hired people in recovery. So I got used to the unique needs. And again, going back to what Sadie was saying about just really dealing with what comes up for people and letting that be okay, right? All the way from, you know, the health needs of their children or their cat or whatever is necessary. Make sure that we're not putting added stress on their life, that we're more of a solution to their life. And we give them some extra funding for their debts or their day-to-day expenses. And we provide them the ability to work in their passion. And we're understanding when they have unique needs. We really have a close relationship with our peers. It's a really close-knit team. And I remember being on a call with the clinical supervisor, and I would jump on as the administrative supervisor. And normally I don't go on the call, so they have somewhere safe to talk about, like if they had an issue that they didn't want me to hear about. So we give them that space. But, you know, as we've built, I remember one of our peers saying to me, Rich, you don't have to worry. Nobody on this call is afraid to say what needs to be said. And that's the kind of employer we want to be. The people aren't afraid to say what needs to be said.
That's incredible. And I'm sure for your peer specialists to feel supported and your recovery coaches to feel supported in that way, to know that they can say whatever they need to say and there is no harm in doing that, has to feel wonderful for them.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. It really builds a bond.
Yes. So to quote you, Rich, it sounds like both of you, both you and Sadie, absolutely put your passion into action. And I think it is very evident by what we've discussed on this call and the stories that you've both shared. And it's been an absolute robust conversation and something that I've very, very much enjoyed. And I think that there is a lot of takeaway for our listeners as they listen to this podcast and maybe integrate some of the things that we've learned today in their own organizations. So I'm very, very appreciative to both of you. I appreciate your time. I've looked forward to this call for a while now, and I look forward to speaking with you all in the future and seeing what else we can learn from each other.
Totally. Thank you so much for having me, and let me know if we can do anything together in the future too.
Yes, Mackenzie, thanks so much. I'm glad to be part of it and to share about what's really working for us, and hopefully others can use it. And yes, and if you need anything, you know, feel free to reach out. We're glad to be a part of it.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To learn more about how COSAP is supporting communities across the nation, visit us at www.cosapresources.org. We also welcome your email at COSAP@IIR.com.